Vengattu, the birth of Sri T. N. Venkatraman on May 26, 1914, carried more than ordinary significance to the family of Sri Bhagwan, since this event saved it from extinction. Sri Bhagwan's elder brother, Sri Nagaswami Iyer, was dead by then, and the sister Alamelu, though married, had no children. The younger brother, Sri Nagasundaram Iyer, whose sannyasa name was Sri Niranjananda Swami, had lost two children. The sole hope of continuing the line lay in the birth of a child to him again. The mother Ayagammal was greatly distressed and came to her Swami son at Arunachala, accompanied by Mangalam, Nagasundramayya's wife, and sought Sri Bhagwan's blessing for a son. That Mangalam was thus blessed is evident from the following entry in the diary of Sri K. Natesan, then Supervisor, Corporation of Madras, under the date 30-11-1947. Child Mangalam, Venkatu's third daughter, a year old, prostrated herself before Sri Bhagwan after loudly addressing him as Tata, grandfather. Sri Bhagwan remarked, her grandmother was named Mangalam too. I asked Sri Bhagwan whether she had ever come to see him. Sri Bhagwan replied, oh yes, she came to the Virupaksha cave along with mother. They stayed for the night there, which was unusual. This was the first and only occasion when women were permitted to do so. She returned home and became pregnant, and Venkatu was born. When he was two, Mangalam died. Seeing his child Mangalam, one remembers all this. The family of Nelliyappaiyar, Sri Bhagwan's uncle, in whose house at Manamadurai, Sri T. N. Venkatraman was born, supported the young child. The father, Nagasundaram Iyer, went to Arunachala, where he took sannyasa under the name of Sri Niranjananda Swami. The motherless child used to address Nelliyappa Iyer's wife as Amma. After 3 years, Sri Bhagwan's sister Alamel Ammal, known to ashram devotees as Attai, aunt, and her husband Sri Pichu Iyer, took over the care of the child and brought him up with great affection. He, like Sri Bhagwan, was given the name Venkatraman, after Lord Venkateshwara of Tirupati, the family deity. The shortened name Venkatu, by which devotees still know him, had come into vogue in childhood. He was brought to Tiruvannamalai twice or thrice a year to see Sri Bhagwan, then living in Skandashram. Women were not allowed to stay in the ashram, but Sri Bhagwan assured Attai that she could safely leave the child in his care. On such occasion, he would himself put him to sleep, wash him, and clean his teeth in the morning. Sri T. N. Venkatraman went to school at Tiruppattur near Ramanathapuram and Manamadurai. In 1929, he married Nagalakshmi, daughter of Sri Bhagwan's uncle, Sri Ramachandra Iyer. He was employed for a year in the Kundrakudi Subramanya Temple Devasthanam and then changed over to the Chettinad Bank, where he continued till the end of January 1938. For his marriage, the ashram sent its blessings together with new clothes and other gifts through Sri Gopal Rao, the then secretary of the ashram. Sri Gopal Rao had much trouble in reaching Vettiyur, the venue of the wedding, since the village was inaccessible by rail or road. The course of Venkatu's life was changed in January 1938 when he received a letter from the ashram summoning him to Tiruvannamalai with his family and Attai and her husband. Before embarking on this change, Sri T. N. Venkatraman, now the father of two children, requested Sri Chellam Iyer to go and find out whether the summons had the sanction of Sri Bhagwan. When approached by him along with Sri Yogi Ramayya, Sri Bhagwan confirmed it. When someone said that Venkatu had a family, Bhagwan added, what of that? Let him bring them too. Thus it was with Sri Bhagwan's consent and blessings that Sri T. N. Venkatraman came to the ashram for good. And so, from February 1, 1938, Sri T. N. Venkatraman worked in the ashram office, assisting Sri Niranjananda Swami, the Sarvadhikari, sole manager, whom he succeeded as president on January 30, 1953. On several occasions, when the Sarvadhikari had to go away on ashram business, he was put in charge. Sri Bhagwan would sometimes refer people to him, saying, ask Venkatu, he is the Kutti, that is, little Sarvadhikari. More than once he said, he is the future Sarvadhikari. Take his view also. Sri Niranjananda Swami was apt to be brusque in manner towards Venkatu. Since he was a sannyasin, he was careful that none of the old relationship of father and son should continue as between him and Venkatu. He was very curt and would not allow Venkatu even to join group photographs. Once it was Kavyakanta Ganapati Muni, group photo taken on 28th December 1928, and more than once it was Sri Bhagwan when the group photo taken on 30th November 1947, who intervened and insisted on the inclusion of Venkatu. Sri M.S. Kamath, a well-known devotee and the editor of Sunday Times, used to present on Jayanti day new khadi cloths to devotees, and the Sarvadhikari would not permit any such gift being given to Venkatu. A devotee, Premji Durabji's brother, had once presented a cycle to Venkatu, but the Sarvadhikari claimed it for the ashram. The Sarvadhikari did not permit him to move out of Tiruvannamalai, and it was Sri Bhagwan who had to intervene and persuade Chinnaswamy, that is Sarvadhikari, that Venkatu was a householder and was free to move about as he pleased. Sri Bhagwan had always shown love and kindness to Venkatu. When Sri Seshadri Swami's body was interred, Sri Bhagwan asked Venkatu to join him and others in placing vibhuti, sacred ash, on the samadhi pit. When large-scale arrests were reported during the Quit India movement in 1942, Sri Bhagwan remarked that if Venkatu were not in the ashram, he as a staunch congressman would have gone to jail like his comrades. On August 15, 1947, the day of Indian independence, Sri T.N. Venkatraman brought the revenue divisional officer and the deputy superintendent of police of Tiruvannamalai to the ashram and requested Sri Bhagwan to hoist the Indian national flag in the ashram. In fact, the previous night, Sri Bhagwan himself along with other inmates got the flag ready and helped arrange decorations. In memory of Sri Bhagwan's participation in this, the national flag is hoisted at the ashram every year on Independence Day. When Gandhiji visited Madras in 1946, Venkatu wanted to go and meet the Mahatma. Despite opposition from Chinnaswamy, Venkatu approached Sri Bhagwan, who gave not only consent but such encouragement that Venkatu spent 5 days with the Mahatma in Madras and even secured his signature on the photograph of Sri Bhagwan. On his return, he showed the photograph with Mahatma's signature to Sri Bhagwan, who smilingly held it in his hands and also listened with interest to Venkatu's detailed and enthusiastic report on his delightful participation in the Mahatma's day-to-day activities. Once when Nanyar, the original Tamil of Sri Bhagwan's Who Am I, had run out of print and new copies could not be printed for want of money, Sri Ramasatagopan, editor of Tyagi, wanted just enough money to buy the requisite paper and promised to do the printing free. Venkatu was the acting Sarvadhikari then, and he immediately paid rupees 100 to Sri Satagopan. Maunaswamy Srinivas Rao strongly objected. Sri Bhagwan, who was coming along and heard all these, remarked, "What? He is the Sarvadhikari, is he not? What is wrong with it?" The administration of the ashram had never been without problems. There were a few who had acted as secretaries of the ashram till 1933, but these persons lived in the town and also had their office there, so the money and provisions had to be carried all the way to the ashram daily. This was a cumbersome process. So, at the request of many close devotees, Sri Bhagwan gave the general power of attorney to Sri Niranjananda Swami, who became the agent and Sarvadhikari. This was challenged by one Perumal Swami, who had once been an attendant of Sri Bhagwan and now wanted to be the Sarvadhikari. In the legal proceedings that followed, Bhagwan had to depose before the court, which of course sent a commissioner to take the evidence. On the basis of Sri Bhagwan's deposition, which is published as parts from the anvil as a part of talks with Sri Ramana Maharshi, the court declared that the ashram was private property. To avoid similar troubles in future, devotees drew up a will under which the ashram was to be maintained as a spiritual center and its management was to vest in the Sarvadhikari and after him Venkatu and his descendants. Sri Bhagwan listened carefully as it was read out, made comments on it and approved of it. Where a blank space had been left, he told them to write in the names of Sri Niranjananda Swami and Sri T.N. Venkatrama Iyer. He did not sign it, having no name to sign with, but he drew a line at the foot of it and allowed Sri G. Sambashivarao to declare that he had done so in token of approval. The document was registered on March 6, 1938 and attested by Diwan Bahadur K. Sundaram Chettiar, retired High Court Judge Madras, Sri M. M. Bhargava, Manager Reserve Bank of India, Madras, Sri Yogi Ramayya, Dr. T. N. Krishnaswamy, Sri T. S. Rajagopal Iyer and Sri R. Narayan Iyer, Sub-Registrar, Omalur. For the installation of Sri Chakra Meru and the Kumbhabhishekam of Mother Shrine, Sri Matripudishwara Temple, on behalf of Sri Bhagavan and the Ashram, Sri Niranjananda Swami, being a sannyasin, could not do rituals. Sri Venkatraman officiated in all rituals. The Vaidics, together with Venkatu, approached Sri Bhagavan and secured formal permission to commence the Kumbhabhishekam ceremonies. Again, when Sri Bhagavan attained Brahma Nirvana on April 14, 1950, the ceremonial acts of bathing, puja and burial on the following day were all performed by Venkatu with scrupulous care and reverence. Sri T.N. Venkatraman played therefore an active role in both the ritual observances and practical administration of the ashram. After the samadhi of Sri Niranjananda Swami, he had to go to court and obtain a certificate of succession to administer the ashram, of course with the aid of a managing committee. A case had been going on even from 1950, but finally in March 1954, the court declared that Sri T.N. Venkatraman was entitled to manage the properties under the will of the Maharishi. Again, a case went up petitioning the court to bring the ashram under the Hindu Religious and Charitable Endowments Act, which would have meant that ashram was exclusively for Hindus. The court declared that the ashram, a public religious trust, had recognized the position of Sri T.N. Venkatraman as the hereditary trustee, who was to manage the ashram with the aid of four other trustees, two to be nominated by the government of Tamil Nadu and two by him. This scheme has been working from 1964. According to this scheme, the government seized the proper management of the institution, since the budget and audit reports ought to be submitted to them, while the hereditary trustee attends to the day-to-day affairs and caters to the needs of the devotees. In spite of such preoccupations and administrative worries, Sri T.N. Venkatraman has always managed to keep cheerful. His dealings with devotees and ashram inmates are characterized by warm affection and thoughtful concern. Hence, he is sensitive to their requirements and difficulties and offers them the utmost help. The devotees in their turn hold him in loving esteem and regard him like a brother. When he took over the management, the ashram was heavily in debt. Sri T.N. Venkatraman has retrieved it from this position and built up some capital and property by the abundant grace of Sri Bhagavan and with the unstinted cooperation and earnest efforts of fellow devotees. Even a casual visitor to the ashram can notice the substantial improvements effected, the number of new residential buildings, the facilities now available, and the smoothness and efficiency of the whole administration. In fact, an experienced financier saw the accounts recently and remarked that it was a tremendous achievement to have built up a present reserve position. This is a tribute to the integrity, industry and managerial skill of Sri T.N. Venkatraman. At home, he is very simple. His children call him Anna. The family could not have a comfortable life till after the eldest son had got a job. But in spite of the hardship, he has given all his children higher education. Likewise, he has discharged in full his duty towards elders in the family. In the case of Manni, wife of Sri Nagaswami Iyer, Sri Bhagavan's eldest brother, who passed away even before his wife reached her teens, it was Sri Bhagavan's wish that was conveyed through Attai was that she should stay. Manni consented and stayed. Attai and her husband Sri Pichu Iyer also stayed with Venkatu. He always cherished feelings of the greatest affection and respect for these elders and looked after their daily needs and comfort. He took the leading part in the 60th birthday celebration of Sri Pichu Iyer, which went off in a grand manner in the presence of Sri Bhagavan. In their last moments, all these elders gratefully acknowledged that they had indeed been very well looked after by him. All his children are married except Sri Ganeshan, the second son, who is the managing editor of the Mountain Path and also assists his father in running the ashram. With the blessings and presiding guidance of Sri Bhagavan, the gracious good wishes of elder devotees and willing cooperation from fellow workers, Venkatu is cheerfully carrying on the management to the satisfaction of all concerned. His recognition of his limitations has throughout his life helped him to be submissive without being timid and flexible without being infirm. This remarkable quality enabled him to move on the best of terms with devotees and scholars such as Major Chadwick, Sri Ramananda Saraswati, Sri Devaraja Mudaliar, Mr. Arthur Osborne, Sri Muruganar, Sri Vishwanatha Swami, Sri Kunju Swami, Sri T.P. Ramachandra Iyer, and Sri Ramaswamy Pillai. His achievements in completing Sri Bhagavan Samadhi, its Kumbhabhishekam in the year 1967, and the opening of the vast auditorium meditation hall in front of it in 1970, and the renovation of Sri Matrabodheshwara Temple in 1967, will be cherished by posterity with gratitude. His untiring zeal in bringing out books on and by Sri Bhagavan is well known. Anxious to keep the ashram as it was in the days of Sri Bhagavan, he has, despite odds, maintained the kitchen and the kind of quality of food that used to be served to the devotees. When once there was a suggestion that in view of rising costs, the kitchen might be closed and a canteen opened outside the ashram, he got furious and said, "I will never allow it to happen." For I remember vividly how Sri Bhagavan was reading a newspaper article on him and read aloud appreciatively the passage, "There are two fires in Ramanashramam. One is Sri Bhagavan himself and the other is the kitchen fire. They both will never cease to kindle the heart of any devotee visiting the ashram." And so I know how much Sri Bhagavan wanted the kitchen to be kept up and the devotees served good food. Devotees thus have now good shelter, good food, good halls for meditation, good books to read and a good journal to spread the teaching of Sri Bhagavan. Is this not proof enough that Vengato has indeed been chosen by our master for his service? May Sri T.N. Venkatraman live long, happy and cheerful and ever, and continue to do Ramana Seva and Ramana Bhakta Seva.